Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday, January 18th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments. We are going to begin this morning with an informational meeting. We're going to hear from the good folks in the Secretary of State's office, and then we have five bill LCs to introduce, and this shouldn't take very long. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Steve Trout and Barry Pack to come forward and tell us what they've been up to.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. Senator Atkinson has asked me to speak for about 2 hours this morning, so I will try to keep my comments a little briefer than that.
I'll be in my office, Madam Chair.
There are three potential issues, bills under discussion to be introduced in the House that I just wanted to briefly bring to your attention. As those conversations continue, they may or may not find their way over to this side of the building. There are two sections of the elections laws that we would like to try to amend in February prior to the primary and general election of 2012. One deals with printing of party names on the ballots. As you'll remember, you passed a law allowing for candidates to be nominated by more than one party and to have more than one party's nominations printed on the ballot along with the candidate's name. The statute says that the party name must be printed opposite the candidate's name, and that causes some problems for election officials because there's only so many characters on a line on a ballot and you can only fit so much there. As you might recall, last cycle used abbreviations on the ballot rather than party names. Not everyone was happy with that. Voters were luckily not confused by it. We only had, I think, two calls in our office wondering about the abbreviations. But to give county election officials some flexibility, we'd like to make a very monumental change to the statute. We'd like to replace the word opposite with the word with. And that would allow counties to print the party name under the candidate's name. Now, the counties have some concerns around that, to be frank with the committee, that it, in some election cycles, depending on the number of candidates on the ballot, the number of party nominations, that might force them to move to longer ballots or to have to print a second card in their ballot, which, of course, is an increase in the cost. So they may be bringing forth some amendments to actually put, instead of using opposite or with, actually just put into statute the abbreviation so that that would always be the case, and the abbreviations of the party name would be next to the candidate's name. So that's the discussion we'll have in the House, and some hopefully one version of those that bill will come over to you, and we'll continue that conversation here. The second issue is conflict in the statute left over from polling place days. Back when we had polling places, the statute said that county election officials were to destroy all unused ballots after 8 p.m. on election day. That was important when you had ballots spread out among thousands of polling places around the state. Now all of those unused ballots are in one secured location in the county elections office, and county officials need some number of unused ballots after 8 p.m. on election day in order to duplicate any ballot that has been damaged, that for some reason the machines can't read. Another section of the statute written during vote by mail times says the counties must secure an account for unused ballots. So there's a direct conflict, and that has led folks to have some questions about the security and accuracy of the elections. We don't like that. County officials don't like that. And so we've been working with members in the House Rules Committee from both sides of the aisle to come up with a plan to clearly and visibly demarcate ballots that are going to be used for duplications from voted ballots that voters have submitted, and then an accounting of all ballots through the course of the process the counties would file when they certify the elections. Hopefully that will put some fears to rest around all these loose unused ballots that could somehow find their way into a counting machine and provide greater
accountability,
security, something, yeah.
Those good things.
I got to keep working on my coffee here. I apologize. The third issue that we have been having some conversations with
sustainability, transferability.
Yeah, in the House has to do with a bill you passed last session, but the House did not. Senate Bill 270, which did three major things. It eliminated the requirement to report pledges. It eliminated the requirement that our office keep bank account numbers for committees, and it put a cap on campaign finance violations. The version you passed was a monthly cap. That bill did not make it out of the House last session. Some conversations are continuing, and I think the current version under discussion, the last version that I have heard and seen about, is on the cap side. It's a $10,000 per transaction cap is what's currently being discussed, and that may or may not make it out of the House Rules Committee and come to you. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Trout, are you here for moral support and vocabulary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director. I'm always here for moral support for Mr. Pack, but I'd also been invited to talk to you for a couple minutes about our new voters pamphlet online filings and some of the issues that have been in the media lately regarding the post office and potential closures and how that may impact our vote
so
by mail process.
Hold that thought in. Before you did that, were there any questions? And I think we've been joined by Senator Burdick electronically. Are we?
There she is.
Senator Burdick, are you there?
I'm here, and I want the record to show that I was on time and the conference number didn't work right.
Okay, we will make sure to make a note of that. Welcome to Senate Rules, and you just missed the very brief overview of some three legislative concepts that are going to be introduced over in House Rules that will eventually get over here, and we've just opened it up for questions. Senator Beyer.
Just a curiosity question, Barry. When the clerks have to duplicate a ballot, do they keep the original ballot along with the other one?
Yeah, absolutely, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, yes. The original of the source ballot is always kept, and it's linked to the duplicated ballot that runs through the tally machine.
Any other questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You all...
And you might need to re-identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Steve Trout, State Election Director. We've begun to implement House Bill 2257 from last session, which allows for candidates to file their voters pamphlet filings online through our Orastar system. The system is up and running, and I checked this morning, and there's actually somebody that is in process of filing their voters pamphlet filing on there, that they're using the system that has been developed and created by our team. We have that open and available for candidates now to go in, log in with their Orastar username, just as they would do candidate filings, and be able to file their voters pamphlet statements. We're moving into the next phase here of working on outputs from that system. Two-prong attack. One, so that it will produce output for a printed voters pamphlet in the formats that are needed there for publication purposes, and then a parallel track that will publish that online so that the voters can go on to the My Vote section and click on the candidate's name, and the voters pamphlet filings will pop up there. Those are all on track to be able to be used for our primary here in May. Again, it's available for any candidates that want to file those voters pamphlet statements online now, and we're continuing work for the other portions of that to be completed here in a timely manner, so that we'll have voters pamphlet information available for our voters in the spring.
Senator Beyer.
Steve, thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, two questions. One, how do you handle the photograph? It's always been an issue. Can you do that electronically? And secondly, when you put the information in, does it do the automatic word count, and is the person putting it in, do they see it exactly as it will appear?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, to your second question, Yes, that they have word counts built in, so you can't even exceed the word count when you're entering there. So we're trying to build in as many protections so that people don't end up with problems outside. There's limited formatting options for them within the box that they enter that then will be acceptable in both of our printed options, whether it's for the printed booklet or for the online version. And so what they see there on the screen is what then will be transferred to our system to be able to produce those two documents. And then with respect to the photo, we're still working on that. That's one of the things that we haven't quite finished, but should have that available here shortly.
Cool. Does the system accept both operating systems, Macintosh and PC?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, yes. It's all web based, so any input system.
Now you tested it because your forms didn't.
it goes through a lot of testing, but again, as it is a new system, any concerns that you hear from constituents or yourselves that issues that pop up, we'd love to hear about those so that we can make sure that we're providing that service the best that we can, and we do go through a lot of testing to make sure that it works with multiple systems. But as with all new systems, there's some things that can sneak through, whether it's a different browser version that an older browser version or a newer browser version that's just come out that we haven't been able to upgrade our system to reflect. So there are those things that we always have to keep on top of to try and remain current and be able to make sure that the system will work in all of those different mediums.
Well, I compliment you on doing that. Not only is it a better service to the public, but also it should cut down on your staffing needs if you don't have to do all that data entry.
Thank you, and we appreciate that, and the leadership of this committee and others in the legislature to give us the opportunity to be able to do this.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. And I would agree, but human nature being what it is, and this being the first time we've done this, I'm wondering about the deadline, which always seems like there's this huge crush of people physically coming in at 5 o'clock on the day that these are due. And with electronic submissions, I know Oristar, as great as it is, has been known to sometimes get a little crazy when it gets overwhelmed with information. So have you thought about how that is going to work with this 5 p.m. deadline? And
Madam Chair, we have, and I think our biggest challenges with Oristar is the automatic filings that there's hundreds and thousands and sometimes more than that filings done at one time that we've had experience that has bogged down the system. I think even if all of the candidates that are entitled to use this system filed at the deadline, we're still talking about a relative small number. And for now, it's an option either to file electronically or to file paper. So we always have the paper to fall back on if there's some unintended consequence, but we'll be working with our people to make sure that we've got the bandwidth and ability to be able to accept the size of the files coming in, and we know the approximate size of a voter's pamphlet filing that's coming in, and I really don't think there's much the likelihood of overloading the system seems small, but we'll have our IT people on making sure that we've got the ability to accept those.
So,
great. Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Senator Beyer? Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can the queue be electronically time-stamped so that somebody tries to file and there's a backup in the queue? It would still indicate what time they got into the queue.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, I believe that is already built into the system, but I will check, and I think that's something that obviously can be can be added to put a timestamp there of when it is filed. But I believe that's already built into the system, but I'll confirm that.
Okay. Well, I know when you an email that you send tells you what specific time that you send it. So, you know, the in the filer's electronic system there's a timestamp, I would think that it wouldn't be a difficulty to get some kind of a little tick on the other end.
Thanks. Senator Beyer.
Just a comment along the same. That might address my concern. I was just going to suggest that if you can, you might want to put a sort of a warning or a notice on it saying last minute filings, and you're doing it at your own risk.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Please
all
go
right.
ahead.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can we apply the same standard to the line that forms outside polling places? That is to say that the polling places actually close at the time stated.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, the law already states that anyone in line at 8 o'clock when the polls close is entitled to have their ballot received.
And, so, you know, in the old days, a sheriff's deputy or somebody from the elections department would step into the line at the appropriate time, and all the folks behind him were told, you missed it.
And Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, my understanding of many of the clerks, I don't know of all of them, but is that they have people there to pick up the ballots at the drop sites. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's in line at 8 o'clock, they put the person there to collect the ballots at the end of the line. And once that person has dropped their ballot in the box, then they secure the ballot envelopes that are there and transport them back to the county elections office for processing.
Thank you.
Great, thanks. Okay, please go ahead.
All right, and then there's been a lot of media and discussion of postal closures and both the rural post offices and regional sorting facilities. And so obviously there's questions as far as how that would impact our vote-by-mail process. We've been working closely with the officials at USPS. Well, we do that all the time, but especially here the last 6 months as discussions of these items have been taking place. The Secretary and I have met with the Portland regional managers and just trying to make sure that we're communicating, know what's happening, what's rumored, because there are multiple moving parts. Some parts of this require congressional action, some require Postal Regulatory Commission, some can just be done administratively in different regions, so there's different rules as far as what postal officials can do and what they can't on their own and which needs congressional approval and so it's it gets pretty complex pretty quickly. But on the big issues, first off, eliminating Saturday delivery, that's been discussed for a number of months. That does require congressional action, and we have been told that will not happen. Saturday delivery will not happen in 2012. The earliest it would happen would be 2013. So that's one factor. With respect to the rural post offices, there were 46 in Oregon that were identified and studied as far as whether they should be closed or not. I know that number has been cut back recently after some hearings and different information that was found. Frankly, the closure of local post offices really isn't going to impact our vote by mail process because the mail's still going to be picked up from people. There's still drop boxes and post office boxes to be dropped in. It's just going to change the counter, where you go, your counter service at a post office. What will have a significant impact or potentially significant impact on our process is the closure of the regional sorting facilities. So currently we have six in the state, Portland and Medford, which would be which would remain open. But then those in Salem, Eugene, Bend, and Pendleton are on the list for potential closure. A few months ago, there was a chance that could happen as early as March. I think with different discussions, and we talked to them about, we really don't know what all of the consequences of this are going to be until you do it. And we have a primary on May 15th. If you could wait till May 15th or after, that would really help us. And so now within the last month, it's come out that they've decided they will not close any of these sorting facilities until after May 15th. So we're going to be fine through this primary with everything, the status quo of the way it is. The issue with the sorting facilities is that by closing those four of the six, many people in the state, instead of having 1 or 2 day service, their ballots are now going to have to go to Portland to be processed and then head back to the homes of the voters. So someone in Senator Farioli's district, instead of their ballot going to Pendleton or to Bend to be processed and turned around, it's going to have to go all the way to Portland and then come back. And so that may, or that very likely will impact the number of days it takes for ballots both outbound and inbound. Now with that, the post office is changing. Currently, their sorting facilities run from about 11 p.m. until 5 in the morning, so about 6 hours a day. As they consolidate these, they'll be running about 20 hours a day, which will change some of the ways that ballots can be entered and that things are processed. And so really it becomes then an issue of when the truck for Bend leaves or when the truck for LeGrand leaves that will dictate when you need to get your ballots dropped. So if you if the truck's leaving at noon, you might be able to drop your ballots at 9 a.m. and still have them get on that truck. So there's a lot of things that we can work and the counties can work with the post office as their processes change to minimize the impacts of this. We'll be having a representative from the post office at a midwinter conference with all the county clerks next month, where we will discuss some of these options to include a verification process where ballots would be verified by postal officials by reviewing a sampling of those so that they would be able to be dropped in the local area and the ballots just go outbound, so they wouldn't have to go all the way to Portland to be processed and then out. So it would cut a chunk of time of transport off of that. We're going to look at what those requirements would be, but I think overall closing those sorting facilities will have an impact on us. It's not going to apply or impact us for the primary in May. It very well may impact us for the general in November. We're working with the postal officials and with the counties to figure out ways to minimize any delivery length of time, increases in the length of time of delivery of ballots, working with them to try and change some of our processes to minimize the impact that would have on outbound and inbound ballots. So happy to answer any questions. I think that kind of summarizes in a nutshell where we're at, and we're preparing for any and all contingencies and just looking at different ways that we can change our processes to better fit with the new processes of the post office once they determine what those are going to be.
Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has there been any formal or official communication to the folks either in Congress or those in the USPS that are doing the analysis for closures about the fact that we're a vote-by-mail state and that our elections process really does depend on reliable statewide service, operated in a timely and efficient manner? I know that the senators in our last legislative days, many signed a letter to that effect. I just wondered if the Secretary of State's communicated formally with the decision makers.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I know that formal communications have occurred with the Portland postal officials. I know that the Secretary has testified in front of the Postal Regulatory Commission and had conversations with the Postmaster General. It's my understanding, and Barry can probably confirm, that she has communicated directly, whether formally or informally, I don't know, with all of our congressional delegation to let them know what's going on and how this impacts us and the needs that we have. And I think that may have something to do with the May 15th deadline or their decision that they wouldn't do anything before May 15th on those sorting facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, again, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. Yes, we have written the Postmaster General of the United States on multiple occasions emphasizing the importance of the continued Postal Service in the administration of our elections. And we've been working very closely with the local postal folks. We have a really good partnership with the Portland regional office, and they are very cognizant of the need.
Madam Chair, the bulk of the postal offices that are slated for closure happen to be in District 30, and at least you know, a couple of the sorting facilities would be in the red map areas. So a more suspicious person might say, gee, why are they closing all of the post offices, or the bulk of them, and the sorting centers in the red map? You know, how come we're not distributing more equitably between urban and rural if we have to do closures of any facilities?
Senator, I would point out that there's also one in the blue area in Lane County.
Yeah, well, that one's okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think also, you know, the other point that is important to keep in mind is these local post offices, if they close all 46 of them that they have proposed, while that might not actually impact the delivery of ballots, it certainly has a huge impact in the local communities, because post offices, as you know, are not just places to get their mail. They are important community centers in a lot of these areas, and closing some of these means people have to drive 50, hundreds of miles to get to the next post office. So it has a broader impact than just the delivery of mail.
Thank you.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, I obviously am more familiar with Lane County's elections process than the other counties, but at least in our county, I would guess that the majority of people probably drop their ballots off at one of the drop boxes, which are pretty well scattered around. But I'm curious if I would guess that in Senator Farioli's area, that's probably more difficult to do because of the distances. Are there discussions by the clerks of perhaps enhancing that?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, it's true that we are seeing an increasing trend in the use of ballots dropped off at drop sites as opposed to coming through the mail. We're actually, as we speak, my staff is working on a summary of the number of both fixed and temporary ballot drop sites in each county and the security measures that are attached to those. We have some that are just in, you know, in a city clerk's office that's just there on the counter, that's only open during hours, that's observed with security camera and an individual, and then we have others that are, you know, bolted down out in the middle of the community that provide security there and are picked up as on the appropriate schedule when they would be full. So we are looking at where those drop sites are currently, how far people are away from them, and if there would be a good reason to encourage their use. I've already talked to the post office about when they close, if they close some of these postal facilities, if we could have, you know, most of them have two or three or four attached mailboxes outside, if we could take over some of those as official drop sites to be able to help to keep that close to those people closest to the voters in those communities. And so that's, we're just looking at all options of trying to make this as have as little impact as possible from changes that we know to some degree are going to have to change at the post office.
Yeah, it seems particularly important, following up on Senator Farioli's point, that as some of these local communities are also hard hit by the county timber payments, probably to the extent they were relying on public offices being open, and those offices may be cutting back as well, it becomes more and more of an accessibility problem for folks who live there and who are also busy working, you know, trying to live their lives. So I'm sure you're mindful of all of these problems.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are. There are a bunch of possibilities out there on the horizon. We're trying to anticipate what those could be and make sure that we're not caught off guard by something that would happen. But you know, for a lot of them, there's not an easy answer. If a county decides that they can't pay their bills anymore and run elections, you know, we're looking at you know, different things of what we would have to do. And I know it's not just us; it's other government agencies and how that would play out. So we're trying to keep our eyes open and be ready for any circumstance that may come about. I told my staff at our meeting last week, it's a January of uncertainty with you know, so many different things you know, kind of hanging in the balance, and as we get more certainty and some decisions are made, then we can execute our plans.
Okay, well, thank you. It looks like you've answered all of our questions for today, and we will look forward to working with you in February.
Thanks.
Okay, I'll close the informational hearing and open a work session for the purpose of introduction of the committee legislative concepts. Members, you, I think, received and have also hard copies in front of you, 5 LCs. The chair will move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 255 relating to transient lodging taxes, LC 264 relating to public contracting by state contracting agencies, LC 266 relating to elections, LC 268 relating to elections, and LC 272 relating to non-transplant anatomical research and education recovery organizations. Members, before I... I am doing what I'm supposed to do here. I was asked earlier if we were going to be taking testimony on these, and we are not today, partly because many of these bills wouldn't go to this committee anyway because of their subject matter, so they will be taken up at the proper time when they're referred. So, any questions or discussion?
Madam Chair, I have two.
Yes,
Where does 264 come from? What's the background on that?
264 relating to public contracting is a bill that the chair had requested, and
what brought the issue? I mean, it's a very interesting concept. Is there a problem of somebody? Is there an issue? I'm just curious what the background is on that.
Well, I think there's been a lot of discussion about procurement and contracting procedures in state government. I think right now, given the budget constraints that we are facing, it becomes more important than ever to have a transparent and accountable and efficient process when we both offer and decide on contracts. So that really is the general area that precipitated interest in this topic. I'm certainly, the chair's not the only one who's been looking at this.
I just didn't know if there was one thing that pushed this into effect. I'm just curious. I think it's an interesting concept. And on 266 and 268, in the documents I have, they have the exact same definition. And in my just absolute love and passion for task forces, I thought, what's the difference in those two?
Senator Atkinson, they are the exact same bill in order to be
to have two vehicles?
We have one of those is a tag team bill, and one is a chair bill. And so,
I'm
unfamiliar
with the phrase tag team.
It's a co-sponsored bill by both Senator Farioli and Senator Rosenbaum.
Uh-huh.
And so we wanted to be fair and accurate and keep them both exactly the same.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
Just a comment. Just repeating the normal. It's a courtesy vote to introduce the bills, and it's not a sign of commitment to any of them.
Thank you, Senator Beyer, for clarifying that. That is absolutely the case. So, do I need to restate my own motion?
You do not, Madam
no.
Chair.
No. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is so ordered. And is there anything we need to share with the members, Erin, in terms of our schedule or?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have a Friday meeting schedule starting in February. It'll be from 1 to 2:45, at least for the first couple of weeks. We will anticipate, like past sessions, we will increase meetings as session moves along. I would plan, though, for right now, for at least the first couple of weeks, just meeting on the 3rd and the 10th. We will let you know as soon as possible if we need to consider additional meetings for any reason in those first few weeks of session, and then just anticipate as the weeks go on, we will be increasing the frequency of our meetings.
Thank you, and I don't see any further discussion, so thank you for your patience and your promptness, and with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.